and book your appointment online. If necessary, you can also call 1-877-644-4545. Once you've been vaccinated, it's important to continue to protect yourself by following the basic health guidelines. The vaccine, a safe way to protect ourselves. A message from the gouvernement du Québec.
You're tuned into Free City Radio on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. It is Wednesday, the 17th of March. I'm your host, Stefan Christophe. We broadcast every Wednesday at 11 a.m. We're just with you till 11:30. Thanks for tuning in. CKUT People Powered Radio is listener-supported radio. Our funding drive is coming up. Please visit ckut.ca for more information. On the broadcast today, I'm going to be focusing on Haiti. I'm going to be speaking with Jean Saint-Ville, who is a Haitian activist who has been working to highlight the ongoing protest movement in Haiti. Over the last months, and actually extending to years, there's been a protest against state-driven corruption that is really impacting poor and working communities in the country. The particular focus for an upcoming action that Jean Saint-Ville and other activists in the Haitian diaspora are organizing this weekend on the International Day Against Racism, which is the 21st of March on Sunday, is going to be the complicity of the Canadian government in the sense that the current president of Haiti, President Moïse, has extended their term in office in a rebuke to electoral regulations. This has been met with widespread protests in Haiti. But despite that, the Canadian government maintains diplomatic relations with the Haitian government, which now is an unelected government. So Jean Saint-Ville gets into all the details. I'll just leave it to him to share his reflections and voice here on Free City Radio on CKUT.
And thank you, Stefan, for doing this.
Thank you.
As you know, we always mention how very rarely do we have a comprehensive analysis of what's happening in Haiti, and it often is reduced to sound bites and falls into cliches, and many of them very racist cliches about, you know, Black people not being able to govern themselves. And then that gives people a quick way to just turn the page and forget about the issue. In reality, the tragedy that's happening in Haiti today concerns us all Canadians because we played an active part in creating the current mess. Of course, at the surface, what you see today is a population that has risen against a corrupt regime. In the last couple of years, the focus has been on corruption because there's the specific $4.2 billion of the Petro-Caribe funds that was embezzled. That money is money that was made available to the Haitian state through the government of Venezuela's program called Petro-Caribe, where countries in the Caribbean purchase oil from Venezuela at a preferential rate, and they return the money in the forms of goods or in dollars, but over a long period of time. There's about 40 or 60% of the money that can be returned on a period of 25 years. And so Haiti was a beneficiary and participant in that program. Mm-hmm. And it became evident to the population that the government of Michel Martelly and then of Jovenel Moïse from the same regime, the post-coup regime, which were propped up by what we call the core group, or the foreigners who are effectively running the show in Haiti through fake elections and puppet regimes, they stole that money. And so you have a tragedy here that affects both the people of Haiti, but also the people of Venezuela. Because as you know, Venezuela is also a country in crisis where this money could have helped the people of Venezuela. And it's not helping either the impoverished people of Venezuela or the impoverished people of Haiti.
Sure.
But
sure,
it's playing a very geopolitical agenda where Washington and its allies are all too happy to destroy a perfect South-to-South partnership initiated by Hugo Chavez.
So to conceptualize, this was about a decade ago, or maybe a little bit more, that mm-hmm. this was a solidarity initiative that the Venezuelan state had enacted, not just for Haiti, but countries of the Caribbean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you can see evidence of other countries. I had the privilege of being in Guatemala and in Belize last year. Mm-hmm. And you could see how some of these small states benefited from the Petro-Caribbean funds. Or even across the border in Dominican Republic, they built part of their metro with that fund.
Okay.
So many countries, Jamaica benefited from it, a number of countries benefited from it. And Haitians are very angry because we've never had so much money available to the Haitian budget. Never. I mean, when we had a legitimate government, the government of Jean-Bertrand Aristide back before the 2004 coup, the budget of the Republic of Haiti was something close to $400 million. I mean, something ridiculous. There's not much you can do with $400 million for a nation of several million people. Now, and on top of that, this was a government that was being harassed by the International Monetary Fund, the World Bank, and the whole gang that uses financial institutions to placate governments that they don't like. So for instance, under Aristide, instead of helping Haiti financially, you had the IDB, for instance, that the United States demanded that the government of Aristide pays arrears on loans that were made to the government of Duvalier. So the Duvalier dictatorship, as you know, lasted from 1957 to 1986, and the Duvalier stole billions of dollars and went to France and mm-hmm. spent that money in the French economy, and actually some of the money was invested in Canada. Now, this money stolen by the Duvalier dictatorship, they ask a legitimate government, that of Lavalas, of Jean-Bertrand Aristide, pay those stolen funds before they can access loans, new loans that were negotiated by the Lavalas government for infrastructure, road building, healthcare, education, and all these things. So it's a pattern. Every time Haiti has finally a progressive government, where they are investing, for instance, 16% of the Haitian budget, that small budget that I told you about, 16% of it was dedicated to healthcare under Lavalas. Today, it's less than 4%. So obviously, you can understand why you see people who are dying of cholera and of things in Haiti. They don't have any place to go to get healthcare because there hasn't been any investment in those areas. So more recently, mm-hmm. the protests have been about that. So the people in Haiti are calling for a trial of the Petro-Caribe thieves. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you see this hashtag, Kotkob Petro-Caribe, where is the Petro-Caribe fund? So this became very popular in 2018, 19, 20, and to this day. However, this is actually something that's coming after another bigger crisis, because there were protests even before that. Those protests did not make it to the mainstream media, or the middle class did not, the Haitian middle class did not really necessarily identify with these, because the people who were demonstrating way before that are the Lavalas, and that is the masses, the big majority of Haitians, because when you had the election of the so-called president, Jovenel Moïse, he was put in place to replace a former puppet president, Michel Martelly. Both of these guys were never elected by the Haitian population. And I know some people might not get this right away. The fact is, the Haitian people, just like the people of South Africa, were very thirsty for democracy. So when you have a real democratic process in Haiti, you don't need, you know, people to come from Canada, the United States, Europe, to go and lecture people about the importance of democracy. They wake up in the, you know, 4 5 a.m. in you know, to line up to go and, sure, and vote. You know, we saw it in South Africa. We see it in any country that has been thirsty for democracy for the longest time. However, you will be told that in the last two elections, whether it is Martelly's election in 2011 or Jovenel's election in 2016, that there was a low turnout. Well, it was a manufactured low turnout. It's not because Haitians didn't want to participate in election. It's because from the very beginning, there were signs that the U.S. embassy was organizing a fake process to select a puppet. And people saw the evidence of it by the fact that the electoral cards were purchased by people like André Appel, who is part of these 11 white families that control the economy of Haiti. And these things were rigged. And so that's why today, when you see some of the right-wing folks who are telling you that, well, you know, the solution to the problem in Haiti is to quickly organize another election, the people are saying, hell, what do you take us for? Fools. Sure, sure. I mean, you're going to organize a third fake election and you're going to have us line up and then tell us, oh, sorry, it's too bad that we have a low turnout. But, you know, the 5% of the people who voted, voted therefore this guy is your president. Which the, people are saying they're not going to have it.
Well, yeah, just to draw a few points that you've highlighted, and thank you, Jean Saint-Ville, for putting that forward. So the two past administrations, Martelly and Moïse, obviously have a very important and deep relationship with the United States administration. And also Canada, I think, you know, highlighting that is really important. The over $4 billion that was made available to Haiti through this Solidarity Fund initiative from the Venezuelan state, not just for Haiti, but the Caribbean, has gone missing. I remember first seeing these protests against the corruption. And I guess it maybe just to sort of understand a bit of the context, when thinking about your comments, Jean Saint-Ville, about the recent elections, I think about the fact that there is that sort of very legit cynicism towards the electoral process as having a solution in Haiti because of the intervention of international institutions that we've seen so heavily happen since 2004. When the government you mentioned, Aristide, was overthrown with the support of Canada. But I guess I mention this because it points to the social and economic injustice that a lot of these protests have been focused on. So if you could talk a bit about the ways that the social and economic justice that people have been protesting for, because it's not just simply about corruption. I understand from seeing some of the reports that it's about transforming the political economic situation to have working and poor people have access to a dignified life, which seems to be driving a lot of the protests.
There's also a strong sovereignty message in there, okay? And it's not a coincidence that when the coup happened in 2004, all of the countries of the Caribbean and of the African Union denounced it. The Congressional Black Caucus in the U.S. all denounced it.
Yes, yes.
All legitimate, respected Black leadership in the world, whether you talk about Danny Glover, you talk about Maxine Waters, you talk about Harry Belafonte, you talk about Claude Rib, you know, everybody understood that what happened in 2004 is a coalition of white supremacists from the United States, Europe, who allied themselves with those 11 white families in Haiti who already control the economy of Haiti and who basically wanted to also control the political process. And so they didn't like the president who was investing in a Black majority. And so they overthrew him and 7,000 elected officials and replaced them by thugs. So the political element of it is that sometimes people are trying to divorce the Haitian uprising with the anti-imperialist agenda. And we're saying you cannot do it because Haiti has been in a struggle with imperialist forces from its inception and to the present day. And so how this materialized in the protests that you see in the streets in Haiti for the past, I would say 16, 17 years, is that it takes different forms, but in the most recent moment, you will see people carry a cross on their back, okay? And on that cross, sometimes it's a white cross, sometimes it's a black cross, but invariably you see the three flags, Canadian flag, the US flag, and the French flag. Okay, the three main countries that collaborated in the coup of 2004. So people are very clear about that. At the social level, of course, corruption is something that the Haitian people have been struggling against, because it's also very much in your face. So the, you know, those thugs that the United States and what they call the core group, which is the ambassadors of several countries and the OAS representative,
Canada,
have put in power. So for instance, you will see some of these guys like Senator Wony Celestin, who just bought a house in Laval, Quebec for $4.2 million cash. So of course this gets people revolted, because you're dealing with an impoverished population where in many cities, you know, if it rains, you have inundation. Not because it's a major rain, but it's simply because they've stolen some of the money that was to be used for the canalization or, you know, the sewage system.
Sure, sure, sure.
So you don't have these things, and therefore people are dying, and there's all kinds of insecurity issues as well. The wave of kidnappings that have been happening, implicating people of the government. Like, you have clear evidence. Like, I mean, a couple of kidnapping cases where they found that the cars that were used by the kidnappers belonged to a sitting senator. And it happened to several of them, okay? So obviously, and you know, there's this term that Michel Martelly used, and he pretended that he was just joking in his songs. He says, bandit légal. Bandit légal literally means legal bandits. And so that's how they describe their group. They are legal bandits. And essentially—
And that's the former president who Canada supported.
And in fact, it's more than support. You know, the word support is so weak. Hillary Clinton went to Haiti and told the Electoral Council that they have to reverse the results of the election. Michel Martelly was not even a third place. Sure. And they put him in the runoff, and then he becomes president. So essentially, you know, what they were accusing the Russians of doing to the U.S. election, they actually did in Haiti. So they intervened and they changed the results of election.
Yeah, at a totally different level. I mean, yeah. Thank you, Jean. And also, I really appreciate what you're mentioning about linking this critique of corruption to class and how it how disproportionately corruption affects people. I mean, in terms of people struggling with poverty, but also working people, of course. So there's a protest on the 21st in Montreal to highlight Canadian complicity in this injustice that you're describing. And thank you so much for giving some context and background, because in a lot of the media reports, we don't hear that. Linking what's happening now to 2004. So thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you. And we really hope that people will come out on the 21st, because it's the day that we're supposed to be fighting against racial discrimination and racism. And we believe as Canadians that it's our role to rid our foreign policy of every trace of white supremacy or racism. And we will not stand for it in 2021. And to pretend that we don't see it.
That was Jean Saint-Ville speaking about the solidarity movement with social movements in Haiti that are ongoing right now. On the 21st, this weekend on Sunday, there's going to be a protest organized by Solidarité Québec Haiti that is at St. Catherine Street in Westmount. The protest is outside of the Minister of Foreign Affairs office, Marc Garneau, and that is located at 4060 Rue St. Catherine West, 4060 St. Catherine Street West. And that is the title of the action on Sunday at noon, the International Day Against Racism, is against racism on the part of the Canadian government in regards to Haiti. Contre le racisme du gouvernement canadien en Haiti. And so that is on Sunday. Thank you to Jean Saint-Ville for joining Free City Radio today. I'm your host, Stéphane Christophe. We broadcast every Wednesday at 11 a.m. until 11:30. Do stay tuned for the F-Files that is coming up next. I'll go out with a piece of music by Montreal North artist Dramatique here on CKUT. And just a note, our funding drive is upcoming, so visit ckut.ca for more information about that. Keep it locked on People Powered Radio and stay tuned for the F-Files right at 11:30.
Mystérieux. À l'époque, j'avais pas de mixeur stéréo qu'un ghetto blaster, quelques batteries, mais c'était sérieux. Dans les disques, je diguais comme un anthropologue. J'étais toujours en train de what, entrer des plugs. Me moquais des dangers, des chocs, je m'entraînais fort. Mais le courant transforma cet enfant en Hulk. Comme un dungeon dragon, je me suis promis de plus jamais être punching bag de personne. J'allais devenir le héros de moi-même, sortir en allumant le stéréo dans cette baleine. Guerrier comme un ghetto blaster pour extérioriser le stress comme le boule cesse de Rasta. Je suis pas du genre avec une bonbonne de Valium. Ma thérapie sur la radio. Le rap c'est ma thérapie, ça s'appelle RAP. Le rap c'est ma thérapie, ça s'appelle RAP. Le rap c'est ma thérapie, ça s'appelle RAP.
Ce serait la mort sans mon stéréo. Ce serait la mort sans mon stéréo.
À l'époque, j'étais que nigga, 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 nigga. Petit homme allait grandir, bigger, bigger, bigger. On m'évitait comme le début, depuis le début, le début de tout. Mais j'ai tenu mon début de bout, rappant avec un début de fou. J'ai pris mes props grâce au rap, on disait. J'ai commencé à faire des shows. Give me the loop, give me the loop. Manteau d'hiver, Triple Goose, Timberland, bag of jeans, Barbie Shell, style Big Daddy Kane. Fini les doutes, j'avais que j'étais fresh. J'n'avais que 16 ans, adolescent, à fait test, sans jamais personne n'allait me tester. Comme LL, can't live without my radio. J'quittais ni le content, donnais encore les échos. Un rebel, mon Walkman. On était mon Red Bull, le treble de mes headphones à très haut level. Ici je parle de mes anecdotes, j'suis un street fighter à l'école, un freestyle dans les années bonnes. Le rap c'est ma thérapie, ça s'appelle RAP. Le rap c'est ma thérapie, ça s'appelle RAP. Le rap c'est ma thérapie, ça s'appelle RAP.
Ce serait la mort sans mon stéréo. Ce serait la mort sans mon stéréo.
L'État veut couper les programmes de musique. C'est la mort de l'art que les hologrammes dans les musées. The gangster c'est un radio shit. J'suis le type pour stéréo plus que stéréotype. J'suis l'époque de Bambata, De La Soul, J Dilla, Soul, B Jam and De La Soul. What's the scenario? Jump, jump, soul, they whack de mon stéréo.
Rewind selector, trigger, camin electro. Real rap, naked song, naked camin electra. Ma thérapie c'est le rap, ma maladie c'est le rap. Ramène le beat, ma ligne de vie, c'est un paragraphe.
How's it going? Oh, it's good. Just kind of sick today, but that's fine. I've just been trying to like relax my body and like feel better. It's been really, really sunny and warm here, actually. I think
that's
like,
incredible.
It was like 24 the other day.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I don't know. Usually summer like doesn't start this soon, but it's like been really, really pleasant. And also I like rain. So when it does rain, it's nice to me. I didn't really like Montreal weather.
We can start if you'd like.
Sure.
Okay, cool.
Well, hi, I'm Olivia. I recently graduated from McGill with my master's in a degree that I didn't really like, but I'm glad I finished it. I grew up with a chronically ill mother and a sister who was autistic but not yet diagnosed. And as I was growing up, like, my mother's chronic illness was largely hidden from me and my siblings. And I didn't really know anything about disability until I became chronically ill as well into my mid-20s. So I guess I grew up around disability, but I didn't really understand it until like really recently. And becoming disabled definitely influenced my work and changed how I wanted to serve my community. And my research into fan fiction and fan spaces naturally came out of my disability work because I was mainly interested